I'm right here. What are you asking for? Welcome. You know, that the opening, I saw those old pictures of me at KUZI, and that just reminded me, I got the nicest email from a lady the other day, and she says, oh my gosh, you're not even close to who you used to be on KUZI. She goes, we know exactly where you stand, and I love what you're doing. So we are so appreciative of all of you who stick with us. Our numbers are climbing despite Facebook trying to throttle us back. The problem is for them is the truth sets people free, and everybody knows that. And one guy, one of our sponsors, who's really big on freedom. Dr. Michael Bratland with Chris Dental Family Dentistry and Denture Center. If you're looking for a dentist, I think more and more people are trying to do business with people you agree with. Doesn't mean you can't do business with people you don't agree with, but it means if you know somebody is after the same things in a community you are, you want to do business with them. And Dr. Bratland, he loves freedom. He loves your ability to be free. He loves your Second Amendment rights, because without your Second Amendment rights, you have no First Amendment rights. So if you're looking for a dentist, or you're just thinking, you know, I want to do business with people that think like I do, Dr. Michael Bratland might be just the guy for you. And another troublemaker, Matt McCarl at New Leaf Hyperbarics and Wellness Center. You go in there and tell him, I want to try the hyperbarics chamber. I heard it on Rick Dancer, and he'll give you a deal. I promise you. Matt does light therapy, he does massage therapy, and they do hyperbaric chambers. Also, I thought this is a perfect sponsor for tonight's show. Douglas Timber Operators out of Roseburg, representing timber operators all over the region. They've been a sponsor for a long time. We do a lot of shows with them to promote and talk about the real side of the timber industry, not the make-believe side that we hear so much of. And that's going to relate really well to our topic tonight. And our last sponsor for this evening. Fairway Independent Mortgage Company, Greg Hinkle out of Montana. If you need a lending, you're looking for a lender in Oregon, Washington, or Montana, he is your man. He's located right here in Helena, not far from me. And he is another one who's an agitator. All my clients almost are. Well, we have a few that aren't, but most of our clients are very much agitators, and that's what I love about them. So anyway, our topic tonight, something very interesting. This young man got a hold of me. We've been talking. I started a podcast. I understands the timber industry. We're going to hear all that. His podcast is about the timber industry. And I think right now there's a real mood for people to find the truth, because I don't know about you, but here in Montana, we are sucking smoke. And I know you are in Oregon as well, and Washington and Idaho. And I think we're sick of it. This didn't used to be the way it was. And it's not global warming. It's poor forest management. When you don't salvage, burn, and dying trees, they turn into kindling. Lightning hits it. God, this is like brain surgery. Lightning hits it, starts a fire. More carbon is released into the air, which all you people who are so concerned about climate change and global warming don't seem to care about that worth a shit. And here it is. You're putting more carbon. Do you know the fires in 2 years ago, 3 years ago now? Those fires, just that little month of fire we had with that, put more carbon into the air than an entire year of industry and car and truck pollution for the state of Oregon. So you did no good because you didn't clean up and salvage the timber. And the whole reason you didn't do it was to protect the spotted owl. Well, guess what? You burned up the spotted owl habitat. How smart is that, stupid humans? Jason Davenport, welcome to our show.
Hey, Rick, I appreciate you having me on today.
Man, I think this is great. So tell people a little of your background and how you started your podcast.
So my background, I grew up kind of adjacent to the timber industry. My dad owns a reforestation business. And okay. So I did that every day I wasn't in school, right? I always wanted to be out in the woods with my dad. And, you know, we would be out doing anything from hand piling brush to digging fire trails. Like, we did a lot of jobs up on the Willamette National Forest outside of Oak Ridge when I was younger. We would dig fire trails around the units that they had logged. And then, you know, come fall, they would broadcast burn those units to prep the site to plant the trees. So my whole childhood has been the back end of the timber industry on the reforestation side. So I know, you know, what it takes to get trees in the ground and get them growing, and the amount of work that that is, I think, is really underestimated by most people who are outside of the industry.
So now in real life, so this is your kind of sidekick that you're trying to make something out of, which is awesome, because you've got, that's pretty scary stuff.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest part for you as a burgeoning podcaster?
It's crazy because I deal with a lot of preconceived stereotypes every day, right? Like I spend a lot of time in Eugene because there's a lot of industry in Eugene. It's not specifically the timber industry, but there's plenty of that, right? Like,
right.
With my photography business, I'm all around shooting construction, forestry, you know, you name it. And I talk to a lot of people that don't really agree with logging, right? And I'm like, you don't even know what goes into it anymore, right? Like, just in my time with, you know, growing up with my dad's business, you know, you could see what operators, you know, really cared extra and the guys that didn't, right? Just by the way they would take care of their landings and the roads and be right. Garbage or not, right? So a lot of that has changed, I think, for the better. I spend a lot of time in the woods now too, and I don't really see these outfits leaving trash everywhere and stuff like that anymore. So
what took it from, you're a photographer by trade, so you start hearing all these stories from people that are incorrect, which is, you know, I hear that all the time too.
Yeah.
People have this conceived notion that so here's my funny story I told you earlier, I tell you. So some lady comes on my page today and she says, well, Rick Dancer, if you want to start carbon changing, you don't like the way logging is. She's anti-logging, but she doesn't even know what logging is. Right. And she says, why don't we just clear cut everything and then we won't have any fire? And I'm not talking about clear cutting. I'm talking about salvage logging, cleaning up the debris and the brush so that we don't have the fires. Clear cutting is a totally different thing. I didn't say, hey, we want to stop all fires, so let's just cut all the trees down. And you know, these people don't understand. They've never been out there. They heard something from some environmental group that threw something out there. They, you know, I have friends that have moved here from New York and they see clear cuts first time and they go, oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
And then they see that that's how you then have ground to replant new trees, which are stronger and do more for the environment for carbon. Yep. And there's a cycle of management that goes on here and absolutely, they don't understand that. So what was it for you that took you from the frustration of hearing these stories to now, what do you do on your podcast to change that?
So the easy part of that answer is the reason I started the podcast is I was shooting some photos and videos of the hazard tree removal work up on Highway 126 up in McKenzie. And, you know, these guys are out there. They're doing some wild stuff, right? Like they're flying people into burnt trees, like on a crane, or like they're using a helicopter for a crane to remove some hazard trees out on the McKenzie Highway. And I met a woman up there. Her house had burned down and her parents' house that was right across the highway from hers had also burnt down. And she was probably in her late 60s or early 70s. And she just couldn't understand why the private timber companies up the McKenzie were clear cutting all the burnt wood. Like she was mad, Rick. I mean, she was super upset. She says, I'll never see this valley green again in my lifetime. And I was like, this right here, I've got to do something to try and share, you know, the truth about the industry. Right.
Right.
So I started my podcast, started talking to, you know, loggers, equipment operators, business owners, foresters. I just had on a guy who's a cruiser. And so that's kind of a niche one too, right? Like a timber cruiser goes out and they can tell you, they're basically just taking inventory of the stand of timber, right? So it's a weird one nobody ever talks about. So that was kind of neat too. But I want to show to everyone that the people in this industry, they're great human beings. and they do care about the forest, right? And that's the point I try and drive home with my podcast every time, is all these people I'm talking to, you know, they're hunting, they're fishing, they're hiking, they're spending time in the woods with their families, and they want to see their kids do what they do for a living too. So it's like, you can't have that attitude of, let's just pillage the whole forest right now and run away, and still want your kids, your grandkids to work in the same industry you're in.
Well, I don't even think they care about the industry. Yeah. And what I don't understand is, okay, so if planting trees is one of the best things you can do for the environment, and like life, younger things are more productive than older things.
Yeah.
So by planting new trees, you're building a new carbon basket. Mm-hmm. And by you and I building houses with trees, which everybody does, I haven't seen many of the environmental community pushing the notion of building steel framed homes, because how much does that take in terms of carbon into the air? Right. You know, so we're not, what are you going to do? We have a affordable housing shortage. So, hey, here's a great idea. Let's make it harder and harder for timber companies to harvest timber. So the product is so expensive that those poor people or middle-class people that we say we care so much about can suffer even more and not have a house. And then you blame someone else. Oh, well, it's the contractors, or, oh, it's the city. Oh, it's this. Well, it all comes to roost when you start with that basic product. And I don't see them, if they're so valiant, it's like the climate change people that are flying around in private jets. I get the same thing. I feel the same way. Okay, all of you people who are anti-logging industry, sell your homes and go live in a fucking tent.
Yeah.
Or go buy a cardboard box and live in it, because you can't live in a timber house. If you're truly going to be about the cause, then you better stand. You know, it's like the people that say, I can't use that one because they'll all pull me off the air, so I won't say that one. But it has to do with people. We have too many people on the planet. I don't see a lot of people that are complaining, getting up in line to end that. It's like, yeah, it's so hypocritical. So what's your back? How old are you?
Me, I am 33. I actually went to high school with Jess.
Oh, my God. So you're a Thurston High School graduate. Okay. Yep. So was this like a big... I mean, how did you jump into, because podcasting is, I mean, a lot of people do it, but you had a purpose, you had a reason. Why?
I just felt like, I still feel the same way, right? Like, I have that drive and that purpose behind it. Like, I'll do it for free for the next 50 years. You know what I mean? If it will just help people to see that the timber industry isn't out there to hurt the environment or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, that industry has put a roof over my head my whole life in one way or another. And before I was a full-time photographer, I did welding and line boring for the local John Deere dealer. And we primarily sold forestry equipment. Like, you know, so I've either been in the industry and the reforestation side or industry adjacent my whole life with my welding career. And now I'm doing photography and I'm still industry adjacent, industry dependent. And I just feel like if there's some way I can help, and with the popularity of podcasting these days, like, that's a way that I can get, you know, even people that aren't really interested in the industry, you know, if they have a friend or someone they know that goes on there, they can listen to that. And, you know, maybe they'll listen to the next episode too, about the guy that grew up working out in the woods and never done anything else, you know, and they can hear the passion that he has for the forest and being outdoors all the time. Like, that's why people work in the woods, because they love being out there.
Right. And so do you hear stories from these people? Are they really frustrated?
So we live in Lowell, right? We're about 5 miles from the west end of the Bedrock Fire right now. And there's a lot of frustrations right now with the way the Forest Service handles fighting wildfires, right?
And because they don't do anything.
Well, it sure is what it seems like, right? But my point being is, like, there's this app called Watchpoint now, or... Let me make sure I'm getting that right.
Yeah, because I'm sure people that watch this will want to get on this. I'm an app freak.
Yeah, me too.
You find an app that you can take a picture of a plant, You know, on Google now they do that.
They're so convenient. Yeah.
I love that. I just go and I don't even give a shit about that plant, but I'm gonna take a picture of it.
Right. What it is. I just want to know what it is. Right. So the app is actually called Watch Duty. Yep. And it's an app that everywhere where there's a wildfire, it'll show up on the map on this app and you can click on it and get like up to date information by fire management teams. And, you know, there's evacuation order updates on here. There's everything you need. There's links to the interactive evacuation maps, Lane County Bedrock Fire page. All that stuff is in the app, right? And it's very convenient to get information, right? But with that also comes, you can tell when there's a fire that has broken out on state and private ground. You know, they're holding those around 200 to 600 acres, and they're getting them lined to mop up and put out, put to bed, right? And then, you know, it just seems like I'm seeing a trend. The fires
that are being on federal forests.
The fires on federal forests are going no shorter than 5,000 acres, right? Like,
it's almost like a planned burn.
It's almost like you know, it's, they're just out there trying to play with it a little bit, you know. And then like the Bedrock fire, I think it was Sunday night, got away from them and made a 2.5 mile run towards town. So it's like, you know, I'm 6 miles away. Yeah. You know, everybody's like, oh, that's a long ways, but no, it's not. You got to understand. Right. And that wasn't even with that much of an east wind. Right. So it's been kind of touch and go here for us the last week or so, but I guess you could say like a part-time activist on the Facebook groups. And it's been, how could I say that? I'm happy to choose my words wisely, right? Because I don't have anything against the firefighters on the ground by working these fires. Nothing respect for those people, right? But what I have the issue with is the bureaucracy and red tape.
Right.
Within the Forest Service that causes these fires to get so big. And so I'm trying to poke the bear, so to speak, on their Facebook page and ask questions about things that may get skipped over in their daily briefings, or, you know, try and clarify some things for the general public, because there's certain wordings they can use that make it sound like they're doing all this stuff, right? Like, they said the other day they were trying to locate a good route to make a direct attack on the west side of the fire. But I noticed that they had said that 2 days in a row in their briefing, right? So, like, we just have people driving around the woods for 2 days trying to figure out where to put in a fire line.
Right. Like, do you think people don't believe that they... I think there's this attitude out there. I know there's this attitude out there because I saw it when I was a news guy, is that, you know, if you just let Mother Nature go, well, Mother Nature didn't start the fire more than likely, unless there was lightning involved.
Yeah.
But we're way past the point of the Native Americans manage the forests. I mean, yeah. We have been managing forests for hundreds of years, and it works if you do it correctly.
Yes.
But it doesn't just, but they act like, I think what people like feel comfortable and it makes them feel virtuous and warm and fuzzy when you think, you know, just leave it and let nature take its course. Well, I went up and shot a video for an organization up in Washington at Mount St. Helens. And here's where Mount St. Helens blew in the 80s and yep. blew up. And I went up there and you shoot, and where you let Mother Nature go, where the Forest Service had the land, it looks like shit.
Yes.
There's nothing. And then right next to it, where everybody goes, look what nature's doing over here. That's not nature. That's called Georgia Pacific.
Yeah.
And you have
vibrant forests, right?
Yeah. You have vibrant, beautiful forests that are ready to harvest. They've been 40 years and they're ready to harvest and they look beautiful. And where Mother Nature got to take charge, you got nothing. You got barren moonscape land. And I think people go up there, these people with the, you know, their children and doing homeschool, and they show this pride. Right. Look how nature takes care of itself. And it's like, no, that isn't nature that's doing it.
It's a private timber company.
So Jason, were you always like kind of a bear poker, or were you like a quieter dude when you were younger?
I think I've always kind of had a really good sense of, you know, what's right and what's wrong, I guess. Like my whatever you would call that, my compass is always pointing towards you got to do the right thing, right?
And where'd you get that? Where'd you get that?
I think I got it from my dad, honestly, because I kind of grew up, we had like a, I wouldn't say a strict set of rules, because I kind of had some fun when I was a kid, right? But there were, you know, there are certain lines you didn't cross, and it's, that was what was right and what was wrong, right? And so I think that's where that came from. It's just from my family.
So define the word courageous for me.
Courageous.
And I don't need, I don't want a right or wrong courageous. I want what it means to you in your everyday life, in your world.
I think you could define someone as courageous as someone who's willing to stand up for what they believe in is right, and do that continuously, right? Like, you got to have some intestinal fortitude to be a courageous person, in my opinion. And you don't kind of pick your battles, right? But the ones that you know, you know what I mean? The ones you know in your heart that you need to battle, man, like, you got to be courageous and go for it, right?
What has this tested you like the most in your personality? Like, I could say in my world, to kind of give you an idea of what I'm going for, in my world, when I was a news anchor, you had to be liked to get the ratings so that you kept your job and got your pay. You know, that was part of, you didn't step, you know, news people can't be real or or really attack things, because you have to be liked at the same time. I think what I've learned from running for Secretary of State in 2008 and doing this job, especially since the pandemic and all this, is I'm gonna be courageous. For me, it's like, I'm just gonna say what I believe to be true. The truth is the only thing I'm after. Everything else, you liking me or being my friend or what you say to me on my page and stuff, it, that doesn't affect my life and who I am. And that's been a real lesson, because, and that's been a learning experience, because that's not who I was. Right. It's who I've had to become. And that's a hard road to get to, because you got, there's a lot of shitty people out there.
Oh, yeah. That is one thing that I've been learning with a lot of this stuff, right? Is, especially with my podcast. So I have picked up a couple of sponsors for the show. But I've had so many offers from larger companies like, hey, we want to, you know, offer you X amount per show, but we want you to redo the intro and say that it's, you know, this company named Landing Podcast. And, you know, they wanted complete control over the show, like who I interviewed, what questions I would ask, the duration of the shows. And I was like, you know, that doesn't make it my podcast anymore. Right. So like, I'm going to have to decline, right? So I've gotten lucky and picked up a couple of sponsors that they don't care who I talk to. They don't care what I say. They know that they know who I am, and they trust that I'm going to be a genuine to myself and just be me, right? And that's the cool part about the timber industry, is these people want genuine folks, and they can tell if you're bullshitting them. You know what I mean? They'll see right through that. So,
yeah. No, I've had the same experience. I mean, we had, you know, during the pandemic, I lost several because I think I was, for them, too out there and open about it, about my thoughts and feelings. But the people that I have that still back me or continue to come on board, we just got two new clients. And those are people who most of them get a hold of me and say, I love what you're doing. How much, you know, what is it? And I want to see what we're doing. And that's, those are the kind of people I need, because and I want. Because I don't want, like you, if it's called Get Real with Rick Dancer, it can't be most of the time real with Rick Dancer. It can't be, well, you know, here's the wishy-washy Rick Dancer. It has to be what you really think. And that's the hardest part about doing this business, and it's the best part about doing this business. You know?
Well, it's absolutely hard, too. Like, for me, when I started the podcast, I was still working full-time for a really large corporation, right? And so I had to walk kind of a fine line for a while there, Rick, to where I could say what I wanted to say. I just had to make sure, and I said it the right way. You know what I mean? Because my family's livelihood was on the line if I did say something incorrect or offensive or whatever, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I've kind of been through a little bit of that, not quite as much as like being a news anchor or whatever, but it feels a lot more free now too that I'm self-employed, that like I can just be myself and say, you know, what I want to say and what I think needs to be said. And there's a lot of freedom in having that feeling, you know?
Yeah. I remember when I was at KEZI and pot, like websites and stuff like that were just coming out. So I went and bought anything Rick Dancer, rickdancer.org, rickdancer.com, Rick Dancer TV, everything. So KEZI couldn't buy it. And then I started a website and I started talking on it, building an audience because I knew I was looking to get out of there doing this. And I remember one day the owners came to me one day and said, so do you have a website? Yeah. Rickdancer.com. Yeah. We've been seeing what you're writing.
Oh,
and I went, okay. And they said, okay. Yeah. And they never said
that
a
was
word.
It, huh? Wow. Uh-huh.
Cause it was like, well, they kind of needed me at the time.
Yeah. Copy that.
So that's, you know, having someone by the, you know, what's is always an easy thing, but they didn't make. And then I remember like when the Register Guard newspaper in Eugene, when all this started coming out, I would be sharing articles from them, you know, on my page and stuff. Uh-huh. And I remember the time they wrote me, because they still don't understand how a website works, which is why they're going under. But they, it was funny because they called and they said, we don't want you sharing our articles anymore. And I'm like, do you understand that's a good thing?
Yeah, right.
Like when I'm sharing your articles, that means all of my audience is seeing your article. Stop. It's not your content. And KEZI said the same thing. You can't share anything in here. So then it was kind of fun when the Chambers sold the place. They took a lot of the old video and gave it to the University of Oregon library. So I went to the University of Oregon library and I negotiated a deal where I got to use all my old stuff if I gave them credit for having the video. So okay. I got all my old video awesome. Back. So I was making money, like that's charging on shows awesome. And making money from my stuff that I did at KEZI on my TV show.
Wow.
It was awesome. It was kind of, for me, it was like one of those things where you go, oh, this is righteous.
Yeah, right? You're just like, checkmate.
Yeah, I got this. And I got along fine with the Chambers family very well. They had no problem. When Scott found out, he's passed since now. But when he found out, he says, oh, I heard you're using your old videos. And I said, I am. He goes, that's pretty smart. And I said, well, as soon as I found out you did it, because I had little, you know, little feelers out in the community. And as soon as I knew the deal was done, I'm in there going, okay, how do I get copies of all my stuff? And I'd be in there on a computer with a DVD, like an actual DVD, shutting them in, copying story after story after story after story. It was so funny. I look like one of those it'd be like a movie where I'm stealing something or something.
Yeah, right. That's funny.
So what is your hope for your podcast?
My hope for my podcast, honestly, is just to help. It's two things really, right? Is to help more people understand the way the industry works and how far it's come in the last 100 years, you know, as far as environmental precautions and stuff like that go. And then the other thing is also, I want to try and drive interest towards the industry with younger people. You know, all these industries and blue collar jobs are having a hard time finding people to work nowadays. And like logging isn't quite what it was in the 70s anymore, right? Like you're not fighting 1-inch chokers if you're setting chokers. Like everything is going a lot more towards being mechanized and stuff like that. So, you know, there are still some outfits running big towers and they're going to be setting chokers just like they were in the 70s. But, you know, the industry has just changed a lot. And I feel like it got a black eye somewhere in like the 80s. And as a whole, the industry kind of just shrunk back into its shell like a turtle and decided that, you know, any press is bad press for us no matter what. And I want to try and help change that.
And how has this changed you?
It's kind of opened my eyes, honestly, Rick, to the broad scope of people that work in the industry. For example, the last guy I interviewed on the podcast, he's a timber cruiser, but he's from like Philadelphia.
Huh.
Came out here because he loved riding mountain bikes and stuff, and then tried out cruising for a couple days, like on a weekend, just job shadowed a guy. And he's been doing it ever since for the last like 6-7 years. And so you know, stuff like that, that really kind of motivates me to keep going with this. Cause like, that's one example, right? Like, I have a fairly decent following on like Instagram. And so I've got another guy that came over from Australia to, I believe it's John Day, Oregon, to drive a log truck. Huh. Like, he came all the way over here just to be a log truck driver because he thought it looked cool on my Instagram. So like, you know, stuff like that, that just kind of opens your mind up to like, there's so many different possibilities of what you can do, you know, sharing things on the internet. Right. So it's a pretty good motivation to keep going.
So how has it changed you though, just as a person, not in terms of how you see the industry of them, but what were you before? And now you're that you have this voice where, you know what I mean? Where,
yeah, I see what you're saying. I think it's actually tamed me down a little bit because I've always liked to kind of run my mouth and have confrontational conversations with people. Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I know that no one, I guess you could just say that I like to argue. Right. When I was
younger. You're a debater.
Yeah. But I've had to learn how to do that properly now, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to go out and perpetuate stereotypes. Right. And just go cuss at somebody and have a big rig and fit about, you know, how they're wrong or they're hippies or whatever.
Right.
So it's changed a lot of like how I carry myself and the words that I choose to use when I'm having conversations with people.
So how do people find you?
They could find me on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook's J Davenport Photography. Instagram is J Davenport_photo. I think it's also that on TikTok too. But
And then where do they find your podcast? Spotify?
Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I think we're on like 16 platforms. So wherever they like to listen to podcasts, it's called The Landing, a timber industry podcast with Jason Davenport.
Okay, so it's The Landing. If they put in The Landing with Jason Davenport, they'll probably find you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it should come up.
And how often are you dropping a podcast on?
We're bi-monthly right now. So every 2 weeks. I try and post around the 10th and the 25th with the podcast.
Okay. Well, Jason, keep in touch with me, okay?
Okay.
And if you find something really interesting, I'd love if I'm doing this thing called, well, that's how you got a hold of me, but The Truth About Timber. And when I release one of those, I'll let you know, because if you'd push it out there, that'd be great. Oh,
absolutely. I'd be happy to.
We really want people to see. I've just set up, I'll break it to my audience and to you. I just set up a story for September. We're going to do the same person, the same logger. But one, I'm going to get up early in the morning and follow him. The life like a
there
day.
There you go. Yeah, day in the life.
Logger. And then, and he's a super cool guy. And he's working down in Coquille. Okay. And then he's also, he and his group are working, bulldozing and working on the fire down there at this time. So if that's still going, I'll go there. And if it's not, we'll find a way with video and stuff to make that a story too. So we want to do two things. One is show how the loggers and the industry really gets in there, even before the Forest Service and those folks, to start putting out that fire. That's one story. The second one is just, who are these people?
Yeah.
What does that look like to get up? He's getting up at 2 a.m. driving to Coquille and then, you know, going out all day and then coming back. And
crazy, huh?
Yeah. So we're going to show that so people can see it. We've had a huge response to this. So what's your viewership, do you think? Do you know?
On my podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got 30.
I guess that's a listenership.
Yeah, because I don't have it on video yet. I'm still just kind of a small-time podcaster dude. But I've got 38 episodes up, and we just crested 50,000 listens like the week before last.
That's so awesome.
It's not too bad, right?
Like, no, that's not at all.
For being a super niche show, we do pretty good.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, I'm happy for you. Yeah, keep in touch and let me know if you get a good story or you want something you want to push out there, and I'll have you back on. If you get somebody really good that you want to bring on with you,
okay.
You know, I can put you and that person on here with, and the three of us can be on together.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I can put you on video that way with your, and then you ask the questions and I'll just throw stuff in, you know, now and then, and we'll see how it works, but I'd be open to do something with you.
Okay. Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Rick.
All right, so again, Jason Davenport, The Landing. Look up those two together, The Landing with Jason Davenport, and you will find his timber show. Jason, thanks for being with me. I appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate you, Rick. Thanks again.
All right. See you later.
Bye.
All right. So again, there's another source of information you can use to get the truth about all these different topics. And we want to thank our sponsors, Chris Dental Family Dentistry, New Leaf Hyperbarics and Wellness Center, Douglas Timber Operators out of Roseburg, and Fairway Independent Mortgage out of Helena, Montana. I'm Rick Dancer. Share this on your page. Let other people know. It's not over. We're still fighting.